Yeah, it's a bit of a tragedy, and looking back you'd wonder what all the fuss was about and why it was so difficult. But to paint a clear picture, I hope, and a truthful one for people, in 1988, when the Act came into being, there were great celebrations around the country because many of the pirate stations were hoping to become legal entities. And as you said, they went off the air because the condition that was made was that any station that was still on air after midnight, whatever date it was in 1987, would not get a licence. And so people came off the air voluntarily, and it solved that particular problem for the government. But the difficulty then was that the first commission under Justice Henchy took it upon themselves to issue the invitation for licences. And they issued invitations for licences for 28 areas, or 28 licences. So one for each county and two for Dublin. And these were all on commercial basis. And the difficulty lay with the Act, really, when groups who had been pirates, or groups like the one I was involved with, who had never broadcast before but who wanted to found a community radio station which would be not for profit but would be for the benefit of the community, and in my case it was for Irish speakers, it became Radio na Liffey. When we were disappointed and wrote in about this, we were told that the Act didn't specify what type of independent broadcasting would be, and that it was just that RTE's monopoly was now broken, and the Commission would decide in its wisdom where they would grant licences and on what basis. So the first round of licensing went through in 1988, and the stations came on air in late 88 and early 89. And so some of those would be very familiar to listeners, like Clare FM, Radio Kerry, Highland Radio. In Dublin, I can't remember if
98
FM, and Classic Capital, Kits. Capital. Think, yeah. That's which have changed then to FM 104. So they were, as people know them, local radio stations, but with a commercial basis. They have an imperative to make profit. And they serve their locality, and they play music, and they have a duty to broadcast news and current affairs, 20% of their output. And that all works fine. But for those of us who were actively seeking what we would see as our constitutional right to have, to be able to live our full life through the medium of Irish, we were still left with no station. And so we lobbied quite hard, and we've held a series of public meetings. And at the same time then, we became aware of another group who were lobbying quite hard, and who were looking for meetings with the Minister and with Justice Henchy and with the Commission.
Another Irish language
and
group?
Not or? Irish no. language group, no. but a group, a loose network of community radio broadcasters. And they called themselves the NACB, the National right, Association yeah. for Community Broadcasting. Yeah. And very active amongst them was, I think you were involved with Horizon Radio in Bray.
Yes.
And they went on to become East Coast Radio.
Yes.
So they had been active, and they then dropped out because they got a licence. But those who were still in the NACB, people who are now on air, like Near FM,
yeah.
and to an extent Yall Community Radio, or Community Radio Yall, and Dublin South Community Radio, and a few others, were very active and were pushing for a review of the Commission's strategy. And everyone was very disappointed when the second commission was appointed, and again it was under the stewardship of Justice Henchy, and more or less the same composition. And I suppose it's hard to be objective here, but there was a strong feeling amongst those of us who were lobbying at the time that the Commission just did not want to know about anything except money, that they wanted stations to be self-sustaining and profitable, more than just self-sustaining. They were terrified that a station would fail. Things were very difficult when Century Radio failed, although this was a national station and there are lots of reasons behind that. But it made the Commission very, very nervous. And so the NACB took it upon themselves to invite the World Association of Community Broadcasters, or AMARC, as its French acronym is, to come to UCD in Dublin the summer of 1990, and to host a major conference there. This happens every few years for the World Association of Community Broadcasters. Everybody comes together. It's a training festival, and it's a great space to share ideas. And the main, I suppose, protagonist in all of this, Jack Byrne, now of Near FM, but formerly of Concord in Coolock, Concord FM in Coolock, wrote to the commission and said that this was happening and that there would be a march outside the offices of the IRTC to protest about the fact that Ireland was one of the countries that did not have licensed community broadcasting. And why was this when it had been in existence 30 years in countries like Australia and all over Latin America? And so the opinions differ on this, and I suppose I should be careful, but I'm going to say it anyway. The feeling amongst community activists was that the next move by the commission was very cynical, because a letter went out to everyone to say that licences would be issued soon, and so the conference was held and everybody went home to Latin America and to Canada and to Africa and all over the world, and then we waited and waited and waited, so nothing came. But eventually there was a change of government, and with the change of government came a change of minister, and Michael D. Higgins, who's now in the ORIS, was appointed Minister for Communications, and he had some very, very wide ranging and really well-informed ideas about broadcasting. People might be familiar with his call in 1994 for a complete review of the broadcasting communication strategy of the government, and he had a very wide consultation in that, and he quoted people that academics like Habermas talks about, you know, the importance of democratic spaces for communication and the importance of that for civil society, and you know, very, very inspiring. Unfortunately, the government fell, and nothing came of much came of that since. But before the government fell, going back to 1993, and I promised I'd be clear, and I know I'm not. Back in 1993, pressure was put to bear on the new commission, and the new commission was headed up again by a broad-minded man, Niall Stokes of Hot Press fame. And we asked the question, why not have community radio in Ireland? It's allowed for under the legislation, but you're the only one stopping it. And so between the jigs and the reels, eventually the commission said, OK, well, we'll grant two licences. And initially they wanted one licence for all of Dublin. They wanted all the community groups to come together and broadcast on the one frequency. And again, I suppose that shows the poor job that the community activists, myself included, had done on educating the commission, because the whole point of community broadcasting is that you broadcast to your own community. You're not broadcasting about community issues to a wide city or whatever. You're broadcasting to your own group. So in the case of Radio Na Dhrav, for example, or of Radio Na Lifa as it now exists, they broadcast citywide, or they want to broadcast citywide, because their community of Irish speakers is scattered across the whole city. Mm. But if it's a geographic community like Coolock in Dublin, or like Abbeyfeel in West Limerick, then you broadcast to that small locality. Or people might be familiar with Connemara Community Radio up in Letterfrack. So they broadcast to just 10,000 people, the little strip of land that Letterfrack is on, that runs as far as Clifton and out into the ocean to cover Inishturk and
Inishbofin,
where they have a studio. So another success story there. But coming back to 1993, the commission was persuaded eventually that this wouldn't work, one licence wouldn't work, so they allowed for two licences. And there's no doubt in my mind but that there was a bit of political pushing and shoving going on at the time, because we in Radio Na Lifa were very lucky to get one, because we were the Irish speakers and that ticked a few boxes for important people. And the other licence that was offered was to Ann Olivia, as it then was, and it was to be this conglomerate that I was talking about. And that conglomerate, really the majority of community broadcasters in the Dublin area decided not to go in on that one, because they wanted their own geographic station. So Ann Olivia started in 1993 in Grafton Street. It has morphed since into Dublin City Radio, which is mainly giving traffic news and is doing a good job of that. But I think it shows maybe the lack of education or the lack of foresight of understanding of the commission, because it was an animal that was created out of man's head, not one that was growing organically and one that was going to work. Radio Na Lifa came on air in 1993, and then in 1994 the commission said that they would try this idea of community radio, even though they had two in the country and they had a huge file in the office of examples that were sent to them by the activists from stations around the world. But they decided they would try a pilot scheme of 18 months, and in that 18 months people would see whether they were able to sustain it, and the commission would then decide whether they would offer longer term licences. And so at that stage, some people who had been on the air in the pirate era, like Connemara Community Radio, like Coolock, like Talla, like Dublin South, like Community Radio Yall, all applied for licences, and some student groups, and I was involved in that student bid for Wired, Flirt FM. Andrew O'Bweel, who's now back in his alma mater of NUI Galway, was the main mover in Galway. And in Cork, there were a number of people behind that initiative, but Donegh O'Hay was probably the principal person there. And 11 stations got granted 18-month licences for this pilot scheme. So we all started rowing our own boats and doing our best, but the really crucial single act of the Commission after allowing the pilot scheme to go ahead was that they appointed somebody as a research officer just to see how the scheme was working out. And that person took it upon himself to do a lot more than just researching. He called 6 meetings of all of the stations, which of course stations attended because it had the tag of the IRTC on it. And he pushed very hard for people to stop worrying about their own little station, their own little field, and to start looking to see what were the similarities across all of the 11 and what ways could we work to combine to help each other to survive, first of all, to get funding. We were very successful with that. But also to see how we could help each other with programming ideas, training ideas. And out of that networking came the Community Radio Forum of Ireland, which became CRAIL, which is a fantastic resource for the 20-something stations that are on air at the moment, where they can go for support in dealing with the Commission, with the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland, licensing issues, where they can get legal advice, where they can get training, where they can get face-to-face meetings with other stations and be mentored, and where there's a programme sharing network. It's been a fantastic resource.
I'd like to ask you about the philosophy of community radio. You go into this in great detail in your book about the democratic nature, the participative nature of the medium. Can you tell us a little bit about why that's so important in the general broadcasting landscape?
Community broadcasting isn't really about broadcasting as much as it's about community. That's where people get confused. They hear radio station and they think, oh, it must be all about the number of listeners or the quality of the programming. Is it innovative or is it, you know, the top 10 programmes that people are watching or listening to? But actually, that's not what it's about at all. It's about getting as many people in the community involved, not for the sake of broadcasting. In many ways, it could be another tool or vehicle like agriculture or like drama or like years ago religion took that space in a way. It's a vehicle to get people who have shared and common interests and shared and common problems to come together, to recognise each other, to know each other, to begin to work, to talk to each other and work with each other, to identify their problems and to identify solutions to them. So it has much more in common with community development as a practice than it has to do with RTE or Radio Kerry or Live 95 here in Limerick. It just happens that radio is the vehicle that people use to accomplish that. And it's often quite a surprise to people when they start to work in a station that they have to go through a little bit of induction or indoctrination in order to be, I suppose, conscientized into that way of looking at things. The World Association of Community Broadcasters have a very clear charter, and that was adopted by the European branch of that, which I've served on for a number of years, which is called the AMARC Europe Charter. And the Irish broadcasters, community broadcasters, then honed it down a little bit more to make it suitable for themselves here in Ireland. And it very simply says that the community radio station or television station serves the community and is made up of and is broadcast by the community itself. So it's a bit like the old thing of democracy for the people, by the people, of the people. It's a bit more explicit than that in saying that it should be not for profit. So the station can make money, but that money must go back into the projects that the station runs. Community radio stations are always engaged in a political manner, taking the side of minorities, of the disenfranchised, of the powerless. So we see that in local radio, for example, Radio Kirkabashkin out in Kilkee has been to the fore in working with people who are housebound, with smallholders, with the unemployed, with all of the various groups that are often isolated in remote communities like the Loophead Peninsula, or again, Connemara Community Radio, the same thing with the islands and rural Connemara. Then I suppose the other thing that separates them from other stations is the need to constantly review what they're doing and to see to be accountable to their community. So it's not just a matter of a commercial station seeing are they raising money through advertising, and therefore they must be successful. It's more a case of, do the community know that the station is there for them? Are they using it as a resource? How many of them are they reaching? In what way are they reaching into their lives? Can they see anything tangible that they've done that means that they have, we can say that we've been successful? So it's a huge job, and usually done for no pay, just for the love of fellow man.
And how would you describe then the strengths and weaknesses of the community radio sector at the moment?
It's a typical answer. It's a good question there, John. I think one of the biggest strengths, I suppose, the community radio sector rather than community broadcasting has at the moment is that it's still in existence, and that there are, I think, 22 stations on air at the moment. However, that's also one of its greatest weaknesses, because we're talking 21 years now since all of those stations were first, since the first 11 stations came on air, and they've only doubled in number in 21 years. So if 11 could come on air in 1 year, one would expect that that number should have tripled or quadrupled by now. And as a member of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland, it's one of the things that I'm looking to try and have an influence on, to try and encourage more stations to become aspirant stations and to try and get more communities on air. CRAIL, the Community Radio Network, has a great facility, both online and as face-to-face support for groups who want to go on air. Before my time in the authority, the BAI introduced a really good system whereby people can apply for an RSL, for a restricted broadcasting licence, which gives them 100 days, which can be taken as 50 weekends, which will give you every weekend in a year, or 100 days in a row. So you can try out the broadcasting experiment and see, do you have the strengths that you need, what capacities do you need to build up on before you commit to actually, you know, going full scale into employing people, getting a building, getting your premises and all of that. So it really is a great scheme and a great opportunity for people. I think one of the biggest weaknesses for the community radio movement in Ireland at the moment is the lack of energy and cohesion to try and advertise that and to sell themselves to others. Not in a commercial way, but in a far more important and fundamental way, to say, this is a really good resource for you as citizens of this land, as people who live in a community, as people who see community disappearing from them and who want to try and strengthen it and bring back the good qualities of, I suppose, what it means to live in commune with others, and that this is a great tool and resource that we could use and access. And it's a big criticism I would have of the movement at the moment, that that message is just not going out there.